Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington, and today I have my good friend, Justin David Carl. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Good to see you, Doug. It was awesome to meet up with you at FinCon the other month, and excited to be back on the show for a second time.
Justin David Carl is joining me again. He was on episode 204, and we covered being deep in debt to hitting his FI number. And back then, I guess it was a couple of years ago, you were still working, but you retired, or at least you're on a mini retirement sabbatical time frame right now, as of like the last year plus. You have your own podcast called Fit Rich Life. That's the name of it, right?
Yep.
And you have guests like JL Collins, Jillian Johnsrud, The Fioneers, A Purple Life, and many other people that have been on Mile High Fi in the past. And today we're going to talk about your journey to now being unemployed, early retiree, and why you kept working, which is always curious. And some people have specific reasons why they keep working. And that specific idea kind of goes into one of the main topics that we want to talk about. That's the identity crisis that people run into when they are early retirees. So maybe they have a career as some sort of a professional, doctor, lawyer, accountant, IT, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then you are done working and you have to figure out your new identity. So that's what we're going to get into. So you were working in the last episode, and we get into a lot of details. So we'll link back and people can go check out the old episode. But why are you not working these days? How did it come about? Did you finally realize, hey, you know, I want to give something else a shot, or was there some other catalyst?
Definitely another catalyst. So I had what I would call like a golden goose job. It made me a ridiculous amount of money. And I honestly only worked about 3 to 4 hours a day, 4 days a week, 95% of the year. So I was in business to business sales in SF Bay Area tech scene. And it's a commission based, performance based job. So essentially, as long as I hit my numbers, my boss, CEO, founder, they didn't care how many hours I did or did not work. So I originally made, when I discovered FI back at the end of 2017, I think I covered this in our original conversation, I decided I was going to pursue financial independence while feeling as free as possible and having as much fun as possible. And, you know, so I was making, not in the beginning, but eventually I was making a lot of money. And again, I think I talked about a lot of this in our original show. So on average, I'd make anywhere, and I'll be open because I know people love the numbers. My original FI number is 1.5 million. You know, I hit that probably around 38, and I'm 43 now. But I was making like $400,000 to $700,000 or more a year. My peak year, I made $888,000 in a single year. But I'd say on average, I was kind of averaging around $400,000 to $600,000 a year. And if you think about it, if you're working like 3 to 4 hours a day, 4 days a week, and you're making that kind of money, it's like, why would I leave unless I absolutely despise the company I'm working for? And I didn't. I love the company I worked for. I love the people I got to work with. It was aligned with kind of my values. We essentially provided healthy snacks and catering to the top tech companies across the nation, which kind of sounds like, oh, that can't be that big of a business. But like a 500 person company spends $1 million a year on snacks and $3 to $5 million a year on catering. So I was like working on multi-million dollar deals and deriving commission from those multi-million dollar deals. And I was really good at it. And I really wanted companies to like feed their employees like healthy food, because like that's a big part of kind of my identity and my values. During COVID, I witnessed our company lose 90% of its revenue in 3 months. And I was like, whoa, like this cash cow, like this golden goose of a job may be in jeopardy. So like, I really better start thinking about like what I'm going to do after I leave this. And so in July of, I want to say 2022, I launched the podcast Fit Rich Life, formerly called Alchemize Life. And I launched online fitness, money, and life coaching business called Fit Rich Life Coaching. Because my goal was never early retirement, never work again. Like, I always wanted to do some work because I enjoy working. I enjoy being productive. But I realized that, like, after achieving FI, like, money is no longer the ultimate goal. After you achieve financial independence, the goal should be like impact and meaning and doing work you really love and believe has deep personal meaning to you and work that you actually enjoy. So I decided to start those businesses, the podcast and the coaching, just as kind of like a backup plan and also to have something to like retire to, so to speak. Somehow the company kept going. So like we literally got through, I want to say, almost 4 years, 4 to 5 years before my company essentially went into a fire sale, and like we were acquired by another company. And that officially kind of went down in March of 2024. So that's a little over a year and a half ago. And my company decided to lay off the entire sales team and give a severance package. And, you know, I was part of the sales team. I was the top performing salesperson and had been for the entire 10 years of the company. So at that time, I want to say I was probably around $2.5 million net worth. So like way over my original FI number of 1.5 million. And I honestly think, Doug, I don't know if I would have ever left that job because it was like, honestly, I was able to podcast and coach and work out for a couple hours a day and go rollerblading with my friends. And like, I only worked like hard, like 4 times a year. And that was during end of quarter if I hadn't already reached my quota. Right.
Got it.
And so, yeah, that's essentially, and afterwards I was like, well, instead of like going and finding another sales job, I'm just going to like podcast and do my coaching, put a little more energy into that.
Okay. Gotcha. So summary is you were just earning so much money and not working too hard that it was a decent thing to keep doing. And you didn't despise your job. You were like, hey, like the people, like the mission, generally it was fine. And then you got laid off, basically. Acquisition, layoff, great. Okay. So were you sort of mentally prepared for it? Like for a few years, you were laying the groundwork so that you would have some passion projects to work on, generating revenue in some capacity. I have no clue how much. High cost of living area, but still high salary overall, especially your full journey. So back to the question, were you mentally prepared to not have the job anymore and move on to being retired? And were you, actually, I'll leave that right there. So yeah, were you ready to not have a job?
I knew or had a strong intuition that eventually our company either would get acquired or go under, because it was just like really like, you know, we watched 90% of our company's revenue. Like we're doing $100 million a year in revenue pre-COVID, and then literally COVID hit and we dropped down to like under $20 million a year. And so I was like, okay, high probability this isn't going to like work out in the long term. So let me just plan as if that's going to happen. And so I thought I was mentally ready for this. You know, I was like, yeah, you know, I'm just going to kind of work part-time on my podcast and part-time on my coaching and like be semi-retired and like, yeah. And you and I talked about this at FinCon. Is like I was totally unprepared for like the identity crisis of going from like this high earning, high performing salesperson, because I really was like the top performing salesperson at my company for a decade. And like that, like, you know, as kind of a someone who's always been an overachiever, like that was a part of my identity. And then it was like some of the questions that came up in some of the months following being laid off was like, who am I if I'm not making $300,000 to $500,000 a year? Obviously, guess what I did? I was like, okay, how do I make $300,000 to $500,000 a year with an online business, like just doing work that I'm truly passionate about? That's my work. And I fell into this whole like thing where I was putting like a ton of pressure on myself to like figure out how to make the same kind of money that I made before. And it, as well as kind of like this whole like self-worth journey of like, who am I if I'm not earning that kind of money? Cause it's like, it's weird. I think a lot of us in the FI community tie kind of our self-worth to our net worth. But I think also we unknowingly kind of tie our self-worth to our ability to earn like a certain amount of an income. And I think this can be exacerbated if you make like more than the average person, like for my case. Now, I want to be clear. I didn't always make the kind of money that I've made. Like, you know, that was a whole journey in itself, learning how to make the kind of money that I made in tech sales. You know, I was very intentional about it. So I know what it feels like to only, you know, make like 50K a year, or like 75K a year. So I've been there. But, you know, like my ego loved making that kind of money. Mm-hmm. And so my ego was like, what are we doing? We're not the big high earning guy anymore. Like, we got to get back on track for this. And that just like, yeah, it caused a lot of kind of like self-worth issues to come up for like examination, and ultimately kind of went on this whole healing journey about like uncoupling my self-worth from the amount of money I made. And it took, honestly, I want to say it took like 8 to 12 months. Like, it wasn't just like, oh, cool, I understand what I'm doing. It's like, I knew what I was doing, but the feelings and stuff were so like embedded that it like took a lot of time to unpack.
It's very interesting because if you're looking at early retirement as a goal, you fucking know that eventually your income is going to go way down. And depending on how people have things set up, like, you need your income to be low so you could do Roth conversions and maybe some other more sophisticated tax savings. So it's interesting. Like, again, you knew that that was coming, that you would have to decouple, and it's completely separate. It's very interesting. Do you have any theories why, even though you knew it was coming, right? Like, you get what I'm saying. So like, why do you think you weren't expecting that journey to need to happen pretty quickly?
Yeah. So I think it's one thing to kind of like conceptually be like, oh yeah, like I'm aware that my ego and self-worth is tied to my ability to earn a certain income. And it's a whole nother thing to no longer earn that income and then let your ego like freak the fuck out. We can swear on the show, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So like, my ego was like crying like a little bitch. He's like, what are we doing here? Like, quit being a little bitch and start earning more money. And I'm like, no, I just want to like chill out. And there was like this battle kind of between like my spirit and my ego. And it took, you know, like I said, I think 8 to 12 months to kind of come to, you know, a spot where I'm at, where I'm in. The reason I told Doug this at FinCon is like, I'm ready to talk about this because I'm finally in a really good place. But like, it was really tough for the first, like, you know, 6 to 8 months. And there was a lot of things that I didn't like expect. And one of those was like, I was so burned out, but I didn't realize it. And it was especially confusing for me because, you know, I wasn't working a lot. You know, I was working, like I said, 3 to 4 hours a day, 4 days a week, most of the year. I realized is like, even though I wasn't working a lot, the last 3 years of that job, mentally, I was so overloaded because I had launched this coaching business and this podcast. So I had basically three jobs. I had a sales job, which was a quota carrying. So there's like pressure to hit this quota. I had, at the peak of my coaching, I had over 40, almost 45 clients. And so that at the time I was doing one coaching session per month with clients is different now. But that meant I was having like 40 to 45 1-hour one-on-one sessions with coaching clients, plus recording and releasing a podcast. And it was like I was working three different jobs. And like, I'm sure your audience is kind of aware of like the switching costs of going from like one, the energetic switching costs of going from like one type of work to another type of work to another type of work. So again, I was still like, I was working a 4-day work week, but by the time I got to Friday, I was so exhausted. All I wanted to do was like take naps and watch Netflix and read fantasy books. And my wife, we had just moved to Santa Cruz, you know, 3 years ago, we moved here. And I was like, she was out like building community in Santa Cruz, meeting all these great people, doing stuff, going out dancing. I'm like, no, I just want to like sleep and watch Netflix. And she's like, you are sucking ass as a husband. And I was, but I was just so exhausted mentally from taking that overachiever, like, oh, I have to build this coaching business and I have to release one podcast a week and, you know, I have to hit my quota and da da da. And again, I was still getting 7 to 9 hours of sleep a night, working only a 4-day work week, but I was just so mentally overloaded. So when I finally stopped the 9-to-5 job, I also recognized that I basically had built myself a second job with the coaching thing. Like, what's the point of having 45 clients? Like, I don't need the money. So why am I doing so much coaching that I started hating coaching? I was like, this is terrible. Like, I'm sick of like working with people. So the other thing I did kind of in that first year of not having the 9-to-5 sales job is I really scaled down my coaching business. So now I only work with 8 to 12 people. I removed a bunch of pieces from my coaching business that like took a lot of time and energy. I scaled back and then literally, I'm not joking, I slept 10 to 12 hours a night for a straight year. And prior to that, I'd be lucky if I could stay in bed for 7.5 hours before my body was like, no, we need to get up and do stuff. So literally, obviously my body was like, hey, we need to like recuperate from this like being in, you know, Silicon Valley, SF, Bay Area tech. There's a lot of pressure because like we were a Y Combinator company. So we went through Y Combinator, which is one of the incubators or startup accelerators that like Uber and DoorDash and all these amazing companies went through. So there's like massive pressure for our company to like grow. And that's why we got to 100 million a year. And even though I was good about kind of like, you know, meditating every day, getting enough sleep, there's still that like pressure for us, like that you feel being a part of company. Cause that's the other thing is like, it's hard to uncouple your own kind of like psyche and energy from a company when you're like a part of the company's success. Even if you're not like a direct revenue contributor like I was, I think there's still this like pressure that we all got to like pull our weight to make this company grow.
Interesting. Yeah. So many places I want to go. The most obvious is like the hidden burnout that you didn't realize and your body was just, you were tired. And do you have any theories on why you didn't realize that you were burned out?
Yeah. So I think a couple things. One, prior to living in Santa Cruz, I literally lived in Menlo Park, 2 miles from Stanford University and maybe 2 miles from Meta headquarters and Google headquarters. And I really do feel like the SF Bay Area, Silicon Valley tech geography is like a high energy vortex. It's awesome if you want to build and grow a company. And like, I'm not even joking. Like, it was really interesting. Like, when, you know, I was living in Menlo Park, like, it would be rare that I could, like, stay in bed for more than 8 hours. Like most of the time, like 7 hours, it's like, and if you're in bed for 7 hours, it means you're getting like 5.5 to 6.5 hours of sleep. So like, that's one of the things I kind of learned over the last couple of years is like, yeah, you might be in bed for 8 hours, but depending on your sleep efficiency, like you might only be getting 6 or 7. And, you know, you can, Whoop does a good job of telling you that, or lots of the trackers can tell you this too. So like, you know, yeah, I thought I was getting good sleep being in bed for 7.5 hours, but like I was probably realistically getting like 5.5 to 6.5 if I was lucky. And you do that for 10 years and you have this like pressure to grow this, you know, we're a Stanford startup. Like I said, went through Y Combinator. There was so much pressure from our investors to like hit these insane targets. Like I remember every time our CEO and founder would set like annual goals, I'm like, how, there's no way we're going to hit these numbers. And we never did, but we still grew like insane. Right. And this is the whole like shoot for 10x, because if you just shoot for 2x and you get it, but you shoot for 10x and you do 5 or 6x, that's infinitely better than 2x. And it's awesome like for like that thing, but it like it's a lot of like pressure on everybody. So I think moving from Menlo Park out of kind of like that heart of the Silicon Valley tech energy vortex into Santa Cruz, which is, it's like by the beach, like, you know, chill. It's, yeah, it's very granola, crunchy. People are like chilling, living their best life here. They're not trying to like build the next OpenAI or NVIDIA or whatever. Like, and so I think getting out physically out of that really helped me. And then it's kind of like a fish in the water, right? Like I was so immersed in that tech world that I didn't realize how much kind of pressure there was to like grow at all costs. And then I switched water and I was like, whoa, that water over there is pretty intense.
So the other thought that I have, I'm curious about your overachiever personality. And I think a lot of us have this. And I'm going to go back. I'll let you think for a second. Like the type of student you were when you were younger. So I was actually a very good student all through high school and college, and you know, studied and worked hard. I was better at certain things, but like I was a good student and like got many awards. Like I did the best in certain areas, and I would get awards each year and get those stupid little plaques, you know, in middle school or something, and then. As time went on, I mean, I knew like going to college, there'd be a lot more even smarter people. And then I was like, not even, I was worse than average, right? Like I went like many places, right? You go from a smaller school to a bigger one and then it changes. And then I went to management consulting where I was like one of the worst. So I'm seeing like how good people are. And I realized the effort that I would put in, it's the seed of my laziness. It, basically, the effort that I would put in would not be worth it, especially because there were so many people that were better. So I was just like, okay, like I'm not going to be able to compete with them. So why even bother? Such a quitter. So I'm like, why even bother? And then over time, I'm like, I found my lane and it has helped me like over time. So when I got laid off in 2015, I wasn't thinking, hey, I want to get a new job. I was like, hey, I want to like try to grow my online business. And I was successful. And then once I hit a certain point, I was like, if I just cruise here for a few years, I will be very happy with that. And then as time has gone on, I've like tapered down, complete opposite of you. When you stopped working, I was like, you know what? When it's time to turn it down, I'll turn it down. And I had already disconnected and decoupled self-worth from income. So it's irrelevant to me. All that to say, the question that I now pose to you, were you a good student when you were younger? Were you an overachiever when you were younger? And or did it shift? And now you're like, I have something to prove. And you're in the Bay Area where the energy vortex, it takes hold.
Yeah. So I was totally an overachiever. And I can't remember if I talked about this in our previous conversation, but I pretty much knew I wanted to go to Stanford University. I think around third grade, My dad had went to business school there, you know, and my dad kind of disappeared from my childhood life for a time because my parents separated. So I think kind of like little kid me was like, oh, if I can get to Stanford, like my dad will love me and approve of me. And for the record, me and my dad have an incredible relationship now, and he did end up coming back into my life. But basically, my filter for everything I did from like third grade to 12th grade was, will this help me get into Stanford or will it hinder me? So I was like overachiever extraordinaire, like captain of Knowledge Bowl, captain of Key Club, captain of freaking my club soccer team, captain of the high school soccer team. You know, I wasn't valedictorian, but I think I was like number two or number three. And I grew up in a really small town in Squim, Washington, which is like Washington's like number one retirement town. So like very weird, very small town, but there's like more old people than young people. And I like couldn't wait to get out of there. It's an incredible place. Now I go back and I'm like, wow, I was so lucky to grow up here. It's like beautiful, peaceful. And, you know, similar to you, Doug, like when I got to Stanford and I didn't get in on the first try, I had to, I got waitlisted on the first try and that crushed me. And I had to go through this whole like, okay, am I going to try again thing? And I tried again, got in on early decision. And when I got to Stanford, I was like, holy fuck, the people here are so fucking smart. Now, I'm like, I'm not like one of those insane, like, I don't know, Elon Musk genius, like, you know, hardcore engineer, like just like math so good. But I'm fairly intelligent, like smarter than average, and I'm willing to kind of like do the work to like perform. But when I got to Stanford, and many of the classes were graded on a curve, you know, meaning that like the top performing person kind of like set like where you landed in your grade. And I was just like, okay, I guess I'm not going to be the top student anymore because there's just people I can't compete with. And so that's when I started to like really realize that like there are different forms of intelligence. I might not be as good at math or science or physics as somebody else, but I have a fuck ton of charisma and a lot of energy. I've kind of always been that person, like where like people like kind of try to always put me in leadership positions. And, you know, I recognized that growing up, I was a busboy and a waiter. And then at Stanford, I was a student caller, like calling alumni to raise money. So basically like sales jobs, right? Mm-hmm. And so I realized I had this ability to like share ideas and like get people to make certain decisions or actions, whether that was, you know, leading them or selling them something. And so then I started recognizing that, okay, like I'm not going to be the top, you know, student, but I can like develop these other soft skills, these people skills, you know, sales, leadership, speaking, writing, negotiation, et cetera. And so, you know, I was president of my business fraternity. It was a co-ed business fraternity called Alpha Kappa Psi. It was unhoused. So it was, I was never in like a frat house or anything. It was like the nerdiest fraternity ever. I swear to God. Everyone either went into investment banking or management consulting from our fraternity. But what I realized being in that fraternity was it wasn't what you know, but who you know. And so then I started to realize the power of relationships and like how that could like really like make you super successful if you're good at relationships. And sales career is all about relationships. And really, I think life is all about relationships. And I also think everyone's always selling something, an idea. Let's go to this place to eat. Let's watch this movie. Get your kids to do this. Get your wife to do that, like, et cetera. So like, I think sales is like one of the most underrated skills that everyone does. And so the better you get at you, the better you get at life. So I just, in college, I started and, you know, now I have this perspective, so I really understand it. But the seeds of kind of that, like, those soft skills outside of like relationship building, negotiation, communication, talking, speaking, leadership, that's how I was going to be successful.
Gotcha.
So
Perfect.
So yeah, I was always an overachiever. I would say I still am, but I would say I'm kind of like way more chill now because like I'm semi-retired and we can talk about this. Like I'm not trying to like be the biggest coach in the world and like take Tony Robbins on and like put on seminars with tens of thousands of people and like work with presidents and, you know, whatever. I'm like, no, man, I'm trying to play pickleball 3 to 7 hours a day, 7 days a week and like live my best life and like work out. And like, so I've kind of like come to a much better place with that like overachieving drive. Like it still shows up, but I have a healthy relationship with it now where it's like the way I want to overachieve is like, I want to be the best at living a fit, rich life. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And like money is only one part of that. And then once you have a certain amount of money, it's like, you don't necessarily need more to live like your best life. Right. And at some point you accumulate enough money. And this is, you and I talked about this at FinCon. I think people who pursue FI, they get stuck in this kind of like net worth trap where it's like always about continuing to increase your net worth. And it's like, you're way past your FI number, but like your goal was to get to FI. And it's like a old computer that has this old operating system. And the operating system is like grow the net worth.
Right.
And I was this way too, right? Like I'm literally just like finally uninstalled this program, but it's like, I can't tell you how many people I've talked to, especially like at FinCon and over the last couple of years, where like they're still grinding and they have like $5 million. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, why don't you go invest your time and energy into like all these other incredible areas of your life? Stop grinding for more money and start like living a life that you absolutely love. And that's kind of where I've landed at now. I still want to make money because I enjoy the process, but only if it's second to me living my best life.
And if you're doing the FI journey, in air quotes, right? With, you know, everybody has their own version and everything, but at some point you should probably see your net worth going down. And again, people have their own goals. Some people are into legacy and some other, I'll say, ego-driven ideas about that sort of thing. But yeah, at some point, net worth probably going to go down some. All right. So there's some other areas I want to get into. So you're continuing to work, but it's in the coaching area. So it's coaching and podcasting, right?
Yep. Yeah. And I would say most weeks, 10 to 15 hours a week.
Okay.
Is about cool. What I'm working.
Very chill.
And at some point, I don't know if now's the time, but I do want to share that I almost went and got another sales job because this overachieving like drive to make money was like so hard to unwind. And I was like, I don't know what to do. I guess like maybe I'll be happier if I'm making $400 to $600 like $1,000, like to the point, Doug, where I freaking reconnected from like old, like with old bosses and mentors from my sales career, had them help me update my resume, updated my LinkedIn, and literally even went and had a interview for a sales position at a blockchain crypto freaking company.
That's crazy. Number one. But what was your wife saying to you? How is she doing? Is she still working? And then was she like, why are you interviewing? Was she like, do what you have to do, but kind of get your shit together? What happened?
Yeah. So my wife works. We're both work optional. We both work, but we're work optional. And my wife's on her own journey, you know, so I won't speak for her, but she continues to work, meaning she's on her own kind of like money, career, work, FI journey. Like we're FI together. Yeah, we can bring her on the podcast sometime if we need to. But anyways, she was just like looking at me and I was like, not happy. Okay. Like she's like, okay, if a sales job will make you happy and will give you purpose, like, cool. I support you. Is like, just make sure that you can work from home and live the life that you want to live. Like, don't take a sales job where you're going to have to, you know. And I was lucky, my 10 years at my previous company, it was like work from home. Like, I went into an office once a month, if that. And so she was just like, yeah, like if that's what you need to do to be happy, because like, she's like, I know you love making lots of money. And if that's what you need to do, then go ahead. But ultimately, I'll tell you what happened. And I got really lucky. So, you know, I'm a big believer in making sure that you're kind of like doing the inner work. Doc G, Jordan Grummet, who I'm sure has been on your show. I probably listened to his interview on your show. You know, he came on my show to talk about his new book, The Purpose Code. And when I had him on the show, this was when I was like in the middle of like applying for, like interviewing for the sales job, updating my LinkedIn. And I was like, can I talk to you about this? And he's like, absolutely. Let's book a coaching call. And we booked a coaching call, and he was strongly pushing me. He's like, Justin, don't get a sales job. Like, what are you doing? Like, you could just get your coaching business to make a certain amount of money, or you could like not worry about that either. Like he was really encouraging me to build a life of purpose and happiness and meaning that wasn't tied to making a certain amount of money. You know, so I talked to him. I work with an EFT coach, which is a type of somatic therapy. I talked with my wife. I talked with friends. I talked with my parents. Like, I talked with like colleagues and mentors. And like, one of my old bosses literally said to me, he's like, Justin, I hope you stay a free agent. But if you need like a recommendation or a reference for a sales job, I will be that person for you. But I really hope you stay a free agent and like do your own thing. Basically, as all that was going on, two things happened. Actually, three things happened. One, I found a business partner to help me with like my online business, because I've always been really like intrigued by like building a business online, whether that's coaching or courses or other things. And the reason why is because I actually think that's the fastest path to financial freedom. Because for most people, like saving and investing in the stock market or real estate is about a 10-year journey. But if you build a business that supports the cost of your lifestyle, you could do that in like 2 to 3 years. You might not be financially independent, but you have a business that covers the cost of your living. And if that business is doing something you're passionate about or interested in or love, then you're free in 2 to 3 years versus 10. So anyways, I found a business partner to help me kind of like with the next leg of my online business journey, which is really trying to figure out how do I like uncouple myself from trading time for money. And I haven't figured it out yet. I'll be totally honest. Like, you know, I have a digital course. You know, I've definitely made some sales, but it's, you know, I'm not making $500,000 a year from course sales by any means. More than anything, I just love working with him. Like, when I talk with him, every time I meet with him to talk about like different business projects we're working on, I leave so energized, so excited. And he really understands and supports my vision of like fit rich life and like everything that encapsulates. So I found someone, because one of the things about building a business online is fucking lonely if you're doing it by yourself. And if you're working online, it's like you don't see people. Like, you're just at home working off you might see them on Zoom, but it's different. And then the second thing is I started playing pickleball. So April 12th of 2025, me and a friend randomly showed up at a pickleball court to play, not realizing that it was a club day. Like, our local Santa Cruz pickleball club was playing, and there was like 40 fucking people there, and there was a sign up board, and you got to play at your skill level. And I literally started playing pickleball, and I was like immediately like, oh my God, I forgot how much I love to compete in a sport. And Doug is like laughing his face off right now for those who aren't watching the YouTube. Because it's like a game played with a plastic wiffle ball. And I swear to God, my life is so ridiculously funny right now because it revolves around a plastic ball with holes in it. That's literally my life right now. So I immediately start playing 6-7 days a week, to the point that I injure my lower back because I'm like taking like 5 Advil just to keep playing pickleball because I'm like an obsessive person. And here's the thing. This is kind of a major takeaway really for any man, but any person is I think men don't realize how much energy we get from competing in a physical sport. So when I started competing again, because I played soccer growing up, you know, basically I played soccer from 3 to 12 and from 5th grade through 12th grade, I played 11 out of 12 months year round. And I really haven't competed in a sport since 2001. Like other than some doing some random like obstacle course racing and, you know, cycling, but pickleball, it's like you either win or lose. I think the Greek meaning behind compete is to rise together. And the thing about competition is it taps into your masculine energy, right? And men and women, we both have feminine energy and masculine energy, but competition, especially physical competition, is a masculine energy. And when you play a sport like pickleball or tennis or racquetball or really any sport where you're competing, you tap into that masculine energy and you can actually take that energy and channel it into so many different areas of your life. And like, you can obviously tell I'm like so excited about life now. And a big reason is because I play freaking pickleball 5 to 7 days a week for like 2 to 7 hours a day. Like I literally have played pickleball for 7 hours in a single day multiple times. That was the second thing is I started building community and connecting with people, right? So that's a huge thing. When people early retire or take a sabbatical or, you know, mini retirement is like, you have to have community if you want to be happy and thriving. And like, we all know this, but like men, we tend to do this thing where like a lot of our friends become like our only friends are our wife's like friends and their husbands. And so I've read a lot about this, studied this. And so I really, pickleball has, I've probably met, I don't know, 100+ people. And like, I see these same people, like these same 30 to 50 people, like multiple times a week. And like, I know them and they ask me like, and they see me and they're like, oh, Dragon, like that's my nickname. And they're like, so good to see you. Like, how's this? How's that? And it's just like, it's so amazing. And then also the third piece is one of my friends who is a gym owner opened a brand new gym called Santa Cruz Athletic Club. And it's literally like an Equinox, which is a high-end gym if you're not familiar. And a nightclub had a baby. And it's like the nicest gym I've ever been to. It's 10, 15 minutes from my house. And that opened up, I don't know, sometime this summer or spring. And every time I go there, there's so many like fit people that like I go there and I'm like, oh shit, there's like super fit dude over there, fit woman over there, like I'm gonna fuck this workout up. And I started like making friends at the gym, like really consciously going out of my way to make friends at the gym. So now I have this pickleball community, this gym community, and a business partner who like really understands my vision, and I love working with him. And it's that whole thing about like the quality of our lives is really the quality of our relationships. And I think if you early retire, semi-retire, or like take a sabbatical, you need to make sure that you're very intentional about like building a community. And I think Doug, you and the other people in Longmont are really lucky because there's a really big Phi community. You have the co-working space, Mr. Money Mustache headquarters. There's a lot of Phi people there. And when I lived in Menlo Park, I ran a financial independence meetup group for literally 5 years. So I had a bunch of Phi friends, but then I moved to Santa Cruz and I went into this, like, I'm just focused on building my business and like doing my sales job on my podcast. And I did a shitty job of building my community here in Santa Cruz up until like really the last 6 months. Mm-hmm.
You're continuing to work. And again, we highlighted it's coaching, it's stuff you want to work on. You've changed the scope of it to fit what you want to be doing and who you want to work yep. with and for how long and all those things that, you know, you have autonomy to choose what you're doing. But are you thinking this is like retirement? Is this a mini retirement, like a sabbatical from a corporate job? Or are you finding your feet with a smaller scale of self-employment?
TBD, like to be determined, like because literally the company I interviewed with, it's actually the CEO was the founder and CEO of my previous company. So like like I had a great 10-year run with him. That's how I became Phi. And he came back to me and said, hey, we're still in the middle of like building our product and our service. And they've raised like $400 million. And he's like, I'll circle back with you in October about the sales job. And it's October. So like, so I'm still like unsure if he were to come to me and like say like, hey, guaranteed $500,000 a year, you can work from home, you can still podcast and coach and take Fridays off and play pickleball. Like, I don't know. Like, I honestly don't know. Now, here's the deal. If that job never materialized right now, I do not see myself going and applying for another job. Like, I just, like, I am so in love with my life right now. I love coaching. I love podcasting. Like, I've completely fallen back in love with coaching because I just realized, like, I absolutely love it. I just, too much of anything sucks, mm-hmm. right? So when you have 40 clients, like, it's terrible if you're, like, if it's too much for you. And so for me, my sweet spot is really around 10 clients. So I say 8 to 12, but that averages out to 12. I love podcasting. And right now, I'm like releasing every other week. So there's not this grind to get out a podcast every week. And even that has been like, oh my God, I love podcasting even more because now I'm not on this like weekly hustle. And, you know, I write a weekly newsletter. So like 1 week I get to kind of just share whatever like fitness, money, and, you know, life tips, tools, and strategies are on my mind. And then the next week I kind of feature the podcast and I'm just at this really beautiful place. And so I consider, because I get asked all the time, because pickleball, when you play with a club from 9 to 12 during the week, most of the people are like retired people. Now, there's some people that are 30, 40, I'm 43, but they'll always be like, so how are you here all the time? Like, do you work? And I always just tell them, oh, I'm semi-retired. I podcast and I coach about 10 to 15 hours a week, and I play pickleball 6 to 7 days a week. And they're like, oh, that's really cool. Tell me more. So I consider myself semi-retired, like fully retired from the 9 to 5, semi-retired in the sense that I really only work 10 to 15 hours a week on stuff that I'm really passionate about. And yeah, so I'm not going to apply for another sales job as far as my current mental state. Mm-hmm. If I get a ridiculous job offer from this company,
if you do, call we'll see. I'm at call Jordan. We'll talk you.
Yeah,
through.
I'm gonna have to call you guys and be like, it's $500,000. What do I do here? And you guys are gonna be like, no, stop it. So, real quick, you know, I know we're coming up on time. I wanted to share a couple things. There's a couple things that really helped me that I wanted to share as like actionable takeaways for either people who are literally going through what I just kind of came out of, or like, listen to this. And then when you get to that point, come back to this conversation. The things that really helped me is, one, I read this book called Transitions. If you're looking on YouTube, here's the book. It's funny. I've had this book in my house. Like, it even moved from Menlo Park to Santa Cruz with me. It's by William Bridges, Transitions, Making Sense of Life's Changes. And it's just really about these, like, we finish a career in one area and then maybe like that career is no longer fulfilling and we start to feel this desire to go do something else. Or, you know, you retire from your career and then you're in this new season of life. And it's a short book, but it was really helpful for me. Working with my EFT coach/therapist, like, really helped. Speaking with like my friends, like, talking with Jordan Grummet, talking to other five people, talking with my wife openly about this. Also, big thing, running my numbers in projection lab. So I'm not like a hardcore like spreadsheet nerd. I'm not. I've never had a spreadsheet for my five stuff. I just was like, here's my FI number, you know, is 25 times my annual spending. Cool. Let's get there. And I tracked my savings rate on my way to FI and I used Personal Capital, AKA, which is now known as, you know, Empower Personal Dashboard. I actually recommend Monarch Money now. I'm not sponsored because Monarch Money tracks your savings rate for you. So you don't have to manually calculate it like I did. But I ran my numbers in Projection Lab and just ran all these different. So for those, you've had the founder on your show, right?
I have not, but got to meet him. So he'll probably be on the show, okay, or somebody so from the team.
Basically, Projection Lab is just an amazing tool where you can like map out your like either your FI journey if you're not there or kind of your post-FI journey. And so I started running all these scenarios like, how do I end up at like 100 years old? Or like if I just make $20,000 to $40,000 a year, like what happens to my money over the next 60 years? Cause I'm 43. Or if I inherit like X, Y, and Z from this set of parents or that set of parents, like how does that change my equation? If I factor in Social Security and just seeing those numbers and being like, dude, even if you never make another dollar a day or a dollar in your life, you're going to be totally fine. If you just make a little bit, like, wow, the numbers like get ridiculous. And so like running those numbers, like, again, I'm unaffiliated with Projection Lab. I think there's a free 7-day trial or something. Highly recommend that. And then the other thing, I just had this conversation with someone who I consider a friend now, but you know, he worked with me as a coaching client for a long time. And he's in this kind of same place that I'm in. And he's like, he basically said to me in a conversation the other week, he's like, Justin, like you and I, we could pretty much like at any time we want, like turn on like an income source. Whether that's like getting a full-time job, a part-time job, or just like selling our services as a consultant or a coach. So it's like, there's no fear, right? Like if for some reason we had to make money, we could so easily make money. And that acknowledging that gave me the freedom to be like, dude, I'm going to enjoy being semi-retired. I'm not going to stress out about making a bunch of money. And that's the other thing that I want to mention in tandem with this is be careful what you consume when it comes to like watching, reading, and listening to stuff. Because after I like ended my 9-to-5 job, I was heavily reading the work of Dan Coe and Justin Welsh, who are these like online solopreneurs who have made like ridiculous amounts of money. Like they're doing multiple millions a year as solo entrepreneurs online. And so like, I was like, okay, if they're doing it, that's what I need to do. I used to make almost $1 million a year in my sales job. Like now let's go do it online. But it's like, why? I'm already financially independent. But because I was consuming their material, it was like programming me to go chase that. Mm-hmm. And so you just really have to be careful. Like, what game are you playing? And what season of life are you in? And like the people that you look up to or listen to or watch or read their content, like what game are they playing? Is that the game you want to be playing? Are they in a different season of life than you?
Sorry to interrupt you, Justin, but because I was in the online business world and exactly that. I was part of a community, like paid community, and it hit me when I went to a retreat and there were people doing 7-8 figure, like huge. And like people were like, I want to take it to the next level and the thing. And during intros, I was like, I'm doing less work this year. And I was the outlier. And I was like, I'm kind of in the wrong place. No one judged me in a harsh way, but I was like, I'm in the wrong place. Like everyone's like driving to do more and whatever people want to do is fine. I was not judging them, but I think a lot of them were doing it because they had the chip on their shoulder and they were like, I'm going to prove it to whoever fucking picked on them when they were a kid, or they were just doing it because that's what other people are doing. But
yeah.
One of the tricks of asking why, it's like, okay, if you want to hang out with your friends and play pickleball and exercise, well, maybe you have enough resources and you don't need to hit 10 figures. I don't know what some of the people were trying to do, but it wasn't the game I was playing. So I think that's an excellent point. And there are so many creators and it could be like, hey, if you want to do less work, like listen to shows where people are like, yeah, here's how to downshift a little bit. Or if you want to do more work, then, find the right folk. So, all right, back to you.
Yeah. So my next point was literally like, thank God Mile High Fi podcast exists, because I'm a huge fan of Dan Coe and Justin Walsh. I think they're incredible. And if you're still working towards financial independence, like consume their content, build a side business online, like, and free yourself from your 9 to 5, like, you know, using their courses and their teachings. Like, I think they're amazing. But if you're already FI, like, there's your podcast, Mile High FI, and also the podcast, Two Sides of FI, you know, a podcast where one person's already FI and the other person's still working their way, although the other co-host has now also achieved a FI. And just listening to stories of people going through exactly what I'm now going through, it was so helpful. And I just want to pay you a lot of like love and gratitude for having these conversations on your show, Doug, because it's needed in the FI community, because a lot of people in the FI community, they're going to hit their FI number and they're going to be stuck in this, like, I got to keep increasing my net worth, like, operating system, which is like a program that no longer makes sense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I love how you're always talking about like, yeah, I'm trying to do less. I'm like, and you're even open about the fact that like, yeah, you're making great money as, you know, working for yourself, but like, you know, you've really even turned that down in the last couple years, and you're open about it. And you're like, yeah, I'm not trying to like make a ton of money with my online businesses. I'm just trying to like enjoy the life I have and like do the things that are fun for me. And like, yeah, I want a sponsor for my podcast so I can like cover the cost, because like that would be nice. But you're not like, this podcast needs to make $1 million a year or else I'm failing, right? You're like, no, I want to have conversations that are like deep and meaningful to me. And the fact that you're having this conversation with me, and you've had so many conversations with people who, like your wife, like I, like every time she's on the show, I'm like, oh God, I want to hear, you know what I mean? Like, what is she going through? Is this good? Is this hard? And then every time you have someone who's like just recently retired or has been retired for a while, has been so awesome. And like, big thanks to Carl too. Like, Carl is like totally open about the fact that like he probably still does way too much in his retirement, and like he's like has a problem with like he literally just posted today another house project on his Instagram, and I was like, this man cannot Dude, stop come on. This retired man cannot stop taking on projects. So, and it's funny though, because you guys have a sense of humor, but you're also open about these kind of like struggles that you yourself are going through, or bring on people who are going through this. And it's, I just want to say, like, if you are going through this phase, like, continue to listen to Mile High FI podcast and find people who are in the season of life that you're actually in, and stop. Like, money is just a means to an end, right? And if you've made the money, you've hit your FI number, now there's so many other areas of your life that you can invest your energy into that will make it so at the end of your life, instead of being like, hell yeah, I have an extra $10 million, you're like, hell yeah, I have all these incredible memories and experiences, and I lived this life that I absolutely loved. So I just want to say thank you, Doug, for the show that you put on. Because it's been really helpful for me in this, like, you know, this 8 to 12 month journey of, of, you know, figuring out what the hell I'm doing. So just, yeah, massive thank you, brother.
Thank you. You're welcome. It's a fun show, and I appreciate all the kind words. So I'm glad we got you on while it's still fresh in your mind, but I think it sounds like you're over the hump. And you've turned the corner, and I think it's amazing. So one thing I want to let you do is talk about your pod a little bit. You could plug it here. Anything else you want to let people know where they could connect with you further, find out what kind of projects you're working on and that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So my podcast is Fit Rich Life. I would say 80% of the interviews are focused on either the entrepreneurial journey or the money FI journey. But really what the show is about the hero's journey. So if you're familiar with Joseph Campbell's work, The Hero's Journey, that will totally make sense to you. If not, look it up. But essentially everyone goes through a hero's journey, and they often go through multiple of them throughout their life. And in the past, the hero's journey was like, you know, the Odyssey. Like, some person would go off to all these adventures and trials and tribulations and whatever. But I think the modern day hero's journey is usually the FI journey or the entrepreneurial journey, but it also often takes the form of the fitness journey, like reclaiming one's health, or the relationship journey can be a hero's journey. You know, maybe you suck at being a good partner and then you like go through all the healing that entails. So yeah, 80% of the episodes are really about that hero's journey in the form of the entrepreneurial journey. So I've had, like, you know, Stanford startup founders on the show. I've had many, many five people, Doug's been on the show, JL Collins, you know, most of the big five people. But also lately I've been bringing on a lot of creators, because I think the online creator journey, like building a business online, it's another hero's journey. And like I said earlier in the show, I think it's so cool that you can build a business nowadays online and in 1 to 3 years, like, replace a 9-to-5 income and essentially be financially free, because you're not having to work for a company working on someone else's vision or goal. You're working on your own. And so I'm really passionate about kind of the whole online business creator world, but there's always going to be five people on the show. There's always going to be Stanford, Silicon Valley tech entrepreneurs on the show, because that's just a part of who I am. So yeah, the show every other Wednesday gets released. It's long form. So I love long form podcasts. So it's usually, you know, an hour to 2 hours plus. So if that's your kind of podcast, heck yeah. And then I also write a weekly newsletter, which is tips, tools, and strategies to level up your fitness, money, and life. And that's every Saturday. It's super short, usually takes 3 to 5 minutes to read. And you can get the podcast and the newsletter at fitrichlife.com.
Perfect. And we'll link up so people can get to it in the show notes and everything. Really fun conversation, Justin. I appreciate you taking the time, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me, Doug.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High 5 podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do 3 things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. All right. So we both have a love of caffeine, and I think you might like it more than me, but I think it was like a Black Rifle coffee, 200 milligrams of caffeine, maybe like 40 minutes ago. So it's kicking in now. I'm feeling good. And that was on top of some of the coffee I had earlier, but you're a caffeine enthusiast. So what do you like to consume?
So let me just admit right off the bat that I am highly addicted to caffeine. It is a drug. It's a psychoactive. It's just really, I would say, the most accepted drug in the world, even more so than alcohol. But fortunately for me, even though I have a really addictive personality, caffeine has never really gotten in the way of either my health or like my happiness and whatnot. And I think I talked about that on my first episode a little bit, you know, my struggles with addiction with drugs and alcohol. My favorite forms of caffeine is really all of them, as many different forms as I can find. So and one of the things I've discovered really over the last year is kind of rotating the different sources of caffeine throughout the day kind of makes it one. So I keep kind of like getting a good like caffeine buzz or hit. It seems to kind of make it just more fun. A couple months ago, I'd start with matcha in the morning, but I just found this new caffeine source, and I think it's Optimum Nutrition, and it's a blend of essential amino acids with like EAAs. So it's a blend of that with only 100 milligrams of caffeine. So less caffeine than say like a 200 milligram energy drink or coffee. So I actually start my morning with that. And then I have like a pretty serious pre-workout that usually has like 300 to 400 milligrams of caffeine before my actual workout. Then this is one of my favorite ones. If people are watching the YouTube, I'm not sponsored, but this drink is called Marquee, and it's a tri-blend of yerba mate, green coffee, and green tea. And it only has 100 milligrams of caffeine. So like, I like that it's not like crazy, like some of these energy drinks that have like 300-400, and you know, I can have one and sip on it and not be over caffeinated. And then usually in the afternoon, I'll have some sort of coffee, like, you know, black coffee or espresso. Like, I just got this incredible, I think it's Stumptown, like super concentrated giant bottle that you mix with water. So you pour like 5 ounces into a cup, and it's cold brew. And then you add another 5 ounces of water. Normally, I wait till the afternoon to have that, but just because I knew we were going to be talking about caffeine, I actually have it in this cup right here. So if I need a little bit more caffeine to like really bring the energy to the show, I'll have it. And let me be clear. So before I discovered a couple kind of strategies and tricks, like if I would have too much caffeine, I'd get like serious anxiety, like where I was like, oh my God, like, I'm so like anxious and kind of stressed about life. And then I discovered L-theanine, which just for the fun of the audience, I get a really cheap one off Amazon, this brand. I think it's Nature's Trove, but it's 365, 200 milligram pills. And it's like dirt cheap. It's like 20 or 30 bucks. And like, this will last you like a year or half a year. So I stack L-theanine with my caffeine intake. And it basically, if I accidentally take too much caffeine, I start feeling anxiety, I just take a little L-theanine and boom, smooths everything out. And I'm like back to like energized and calm at the same time. And then on that note, I'll just, cause I'm a, you know, you guys like, I'm a fitness coach, so I'm like obsessed with supplements. There's this 12-in-1 like nootropic stack. Again, yep. I'm showing it to the camera, but it's by MedChoice. And this has like alpha GBC, ginkgo biloba, L-theanine, L-tyrosine, rhodiola, rosea, bacopa mineri, and B12 and MCT. So sometimes instead of taking like pure, not sometimes, every morning I take two of these in the morning. So I get kind of L-theanine right off the bat, plus these other kind of like nootropics. Nootropics are supplements that kind of like enhance cognition, clarity, focus, creativity, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I'm really into caffeine and supplements, if you can't tell.
I was going to say, yeah, you're a sucker for the supplements. I am too, not as much as what you got going on, but note the L-theanine. I also take that, and I have taken nootropics in the past, and often they put it in there because a lot of times nootropics will have caffeine in there, and they'll put theanine to make sure. I mean, they're putting a bunch of other stimulant type stuff in there too. So, okay. So it sounds like you may be having somewhere between, I don't know, 500 and 800 milligrams per day or so of caffeine.
I would say more like 800 milligrams to 2000.
Okay.
And be totally honest. But this is partially because, like, right now I play most days 3 to 5 hours of pickleball. So, like, I'm like sipping on caffeine the entire time of that as well. I also, in addition to all the caffeine sources I mentioned, I also have these little packs of Celsius powder, which I actually gave Doug a pack at FinCon. I was like, here's a pack of Celsius for you.
Yeah, yeah. It was good.
I also get the Alani New Energy powder packs. These Celsius and Alani are both like energy drinks and cans that you can get, but it's way cheaper if you get the powder packs off Amazon. So I'll also kind of like sip on those as I'm playing 5 hours of pickleball. Because, you know, when you're semi-retired, you can play 5 hours of pickleball every day.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thanks for taking a break from pickleball to chat with me today. So, all right. One more. We apparently can talk for about an hour just about the caffeine portion, but we'll have to cut this off. The only question I have, so I take it that you are not like a hypersensitive caffeine consumer, because some people, you know, that amount that you're taking, even with other supplements and being, I guess, thoughtful about the different types of caffeine that you're having during the day, it can wreck their sleep. So main question, do you take any breaks from caffeine where you're like, you know what, I'm going to taper way back to get that sensitivity back? And then any impacts to your sleep based on the sickening amount of caffeine that you consume on a daily basis?
Yeah. So to answer the sleep question, first and foremost, I actually always get pretty much 7.5 to 8.5 hours of sleep every single night. So fortunately, the caffeine does not impair my sleep. But I also take, like, I'll take some more L-theanine before I go sleep. I take magnesium before I go to sleep. I also take this like 12-in-1 sleep supplement by that same company called MedChoice. Again, I'm not sponsored by any of these. I'm just sharing with people what I actually do in case they're curious. And Doug can put links to everything in the show notes. And I forget your first question.
Do you take outside any of the breaks? Sleep? Breaks.
Oh, only when I get deathly ill or I've gone on two different vision quests where you're like fasting from like food and everything except for water. And no drugs involved with the vision quest. It's just traditional Native American vision quest where you're in isolation in the forest. And those were like week-long experiences. Those two times I took a break from caffeine. And if I get super, super sick, but if I'm like just mildly sick, like I got a little sick after FinCon, I was like, oh, I'm still taking caffeine. Maybe not as much, but I'm still at least having a little bit. I know I should. In the past, I used to take Sundays off of caffeine, but I'm kind of like, man, I'm so semi-retired. Good. I love caffeine. It's so good. Like, why would I take a break? Like, let me just switch the different sources so it keeps hitting good. So this is not a recommendation. Like, one of the reasons my tolerance is so high is because I've like ramped up to this amount over time. You know, it's not like I just immediately took 1,000 milligrams of caffeine on day one. It was like, first it was like maybe 100, 200 for a few weeks. And then a couple weeks later, I'm up to 300 or 400. I kind of base it on like some days I'll have way less because I'm like, okay, I'm done playing pickleball. It's 2:00. I don't need to take any more caffeine for the rest of the day. And then other days, it's like I'm taking way more because it's like, okay, we're going out dancing and I don't drink alcohol. So I'm like just consuming more caffeine to go party. Like that's my drug of choice. So I don't do any drugs other than caffeine. So that's kind of like my drug of choice.
Gotcha. All right.